Hey, everybody. Thank you for listening to Lakeshore Public Radio here on the dial at 89.1 FM and streaming worldwide at lakeshorepublicradio.org. It's time for Midwest Beat with me, Tom Lounges. I'm your host, and this program is all about music and the people who make it. Today, my musical guest is Kazim Sultan, best known for his work with Todd Rundgren's Utopia. Kazim sang the Set Me Free big hit for Utopia back in the 1980s. Also, he's been a member of Meatloaf's band, he's been a Blackheart with Joan Jett, and he's recorded and toured with the likes of everyone from Patti Smyth to Blue Oyster Cult to Cheap Trick to Hall & Oates. We'll be talking to Kazim about his new album, Kazim Sultan 2021, and we'll be featuring songs from it, including his new single, More Love. It's all coming up after your headlines. Hey, everybody. Tom Lounge is here with another edition of Midwest Beats, a program all about music and the people who make it. My guest today here on Lakeshore Public Radio is Kazim Sultan, best known for his work with Todd Rundgren's Utopia. He also was the vocalist on their biggest U.S. hit, Set Me Free, back in the 1980s. As a solo artist, he's released his own albums, including a brand new one, Kazim 2021. We'll be featuring songs from that in just a bit during the course of this hour. In fact, we'll get one started in just a moment. Kazim has also been a member of Joan Jett's Blackhearts. He recorded and toured with them for a while. He recorded and toured with Meatloaf and appears on the famous album Bat Outta Hell, which sold 85 million copies. But he's also been a popular and go-to guy for sessions and tours with Cheap Trick, Patti Smyth, Blue Oyster Cult, and many others. We'll be talking to Kazim in just a minute. It's been about 15 years since the last time I chatted with him, but we're going to give you a little taste of his newest album, which is out today. It released this morning. This is good advice, I think. When something goes wrong, blame somebody else. Why not?
It ain't about how you play the game. It's all about where you place the blame. And it's so easy when you have no shame. I'll never grow up, why even try? I didn't know that's my standard alibi. Keep your advice, I'm good with mine.
Words to live by, good advice there. When things go wrong, hey, blame somebody else. Why not? It's the way of the world today, isn't it? I'm Lounges. This is Midwest Beat on Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM, streaming worldwide at lakeshorepublicradio.org. That is new music released today off CASM 2021, as in CASM Sultan, best known for his work with Todd Rundgren's Utopia, but he has been the go-to guy for many artists over the years. He has worked with Meatloaf, Bad Out of Hell. He was on that album, not only with Utopia, but also a member of Joan Jett's Blackhearts with our recent guest, Ricky Bird. He has played with everybody, so let's bring him on right now and talk to CASM Sultan, who has this new album out today on Deco Entertainment Records. And the single we're going to get to in just a little bit has been worked for about 2 weeks now. We'll get to that in a few. CASM, how are you?
Tom, it's really good to speak to you. Hi.
It has been a long time since you and I have talked. The last time I saw you was when you were at Chicago Street Theater many, many years ago. It had to be at least 16 years ago.
Oh, my goodness.
And you were doing a solo tour then. You were in between your many famous gigs. And now here we are in, I'd like to say post-COVID, but we're not quite there yet.
Almost.
But you got a new album, and I'm excited about it, and I've been listening a lot to it. And there seems to be a bit of a theme here. There's a lot of love involved, because obviously the world does need a lot of love. And There's a little bit of sarcasm in there, too, and I like that.
Yeah, well, you know, you have to kind of cover all the bases these days. It's important to have a well-rounded record. You need to get everything in. You need to throw everything at the wall, see what sticks.
That's true. So you have been in the business a long, long time. First time I heard your name was when you were working with Cherry Vanilla.
Yeah. Oh my goodness, that was 1974.
Was it that early? I knew it was the 70s, because I was still in high school, and your name came up a few times.
So was I.
Were you really?
Yeah, I had just graduated, as a matter of fact.
That's funny. I remember interviewing Cherry when her book Lick Me came out in 2010, and I've not heard much from her since then. I don't know if you're still in touch with her or not.
I am. I speak to Cherry every so often. She's doing really well. She lives in Palm Springs these days, and she's always working on various projects, whether it's television shows, movie scripts, or something like that. She's always busy, and I love her to death. She's a great, great person, and I really kind of owe my career to Cherry.
Yeah, she has definitely, been quite eclectic in her career over the years and done a lot of things. And I'm surprised to hear Palm Springs. She's such a New York girl. You can't take New Yorkers out of New York very often.
Well, you know what happens once you get to a certain point in life, and you just say, you know what, I kind of need to slow down a little bit, and I need to just take a real good deep breath. And there's no place better to do that than the Southwest, Northwest, just open places. There are a few other places in the country that provide that kind of respite from the rat race of a city. But for me, I'm not there yet, so I'm still in New York City.
Okay, you still sound like you're from New York, too. I like that.
I do?
Yeah, you still got the New York groove going in the voice there.
I try to keep a lid on that. If I'm talking to a friend, it's a lot easier to fall back into the D's, them's, and do's.
Uh-huh.
Like if I'm talking to Ricky Bird, it would be a New Yorker conversation. But when I am doing press and when I'm talking about my record, whether it's radio, television, or a print interview, I kind of try to keep my mind on pronouncing all my R's.
Well, consider us friends. Just speak as you will.
Absolutely.
We had Ricky on not too long ago. He's got a new solo as well. And are you guys still in touch then, it sounds like?
Oh, yeah. Ricky and I speak constantly. We are very close. And I spent 3.5-4 years working with Ricky in the Blackhearts.
Right.
It was a great time in my life and in my career. And we have remained close ever since.
Good deal. That was quite an experience. That was one of the longest, other than Todd, that you were with a band, wasn't it?
Actually, no. The longest that I was with another band besides Todd Rundgren was Meatloaf. I did a 17-year run with Meatloaf in his live band from 1993 until 2010.
Okay, so you know our good friend Carla DeVito then.
I know Carla well. Carla was in the first iteration of the Neverland Express way back when the record, when Bat Out of Hell 1 came out. And she was the perfect paradise girl. Ellen Foley did the voice on the record,
right?
And then when it came time to tour, Meat said, Meat had to find somebody because Ellen didn't want to go on the road. And Carla was the one who got the gig, and she was perfect. She was absolutely perfect.
Yeah, she's a homegirl from Mokena, Illinois, just a stone's throw from where we're sitting here.
She's the best. She is really, really the best.
Now, let's talk a little bit about your journey, and then we're going to get on to the new album.
Sure.
What started you in music? Obviously, New York is where you're from. New York is a music capital. You were a teenager, and you were already playing with Cherry. You just got out of high school. How did you get into music, and when did you know this was your calling, that this would be your life?
First part of the question, my dad was a hobbyist. He had a guitar. And this was a time in the world where families would still have a meal together. I'm sure that still happens, but maybe not as frequently. But we used to eat dinner together as a family, my sister, my brother, and my mom and dad. And then go out, this is no lie, go out on the back porch. My dad would take out his guitar, and we would sing songs together as a family. So we would do stuff like Jimmy Crack Corn, and I've Been Working on the Railroad, and any one of a number of Burl Ives songs. So that was my first introduction to I guess, music in terms of it being having a direct relation to me and my life. And then in 1964, I was 9 years old, and I was watching the Ed Sullivan Show in February of 64. I saw the Beatles, and I said, that's it. I'm done. I know what I want to do. That is exactly what I'm going to be doing for the rest of my life. Luckily enough, it panned out, and that's how I started my professional career early on when I was nine.
Now, was it the music, or was it the girls screaming?
It wasn't it's funny enough, it wasn't the girls. That came later. it was the idea of something totally new and foreign. I mean, this was alien to my life at that point. You know, I remember hearing Elvis Presley and Jerry Lee Lewis and some of the older blues guys and R&B artists, and it really didn't touch a chord in me until the Beatles, and that was something that just, like, that was the bell went off, and I was off to the races, and I knew that I wanted to become a musician.
Wow. I hear that from so many people we talk to. It's February 1964 changed my life.
It's true. You know, I mean, it's a very common thing for guys around my age, and it's just something about that time. The country had just was just starting to get over JFK, and there was a lot of turmoil, much like today.
Much like
really,
today, I was going to say, very much like today.
Yeah, but there was something unifying about, for youth, about the Beatles, and that, you know, that kind of thumbing your nose at your parents and the establishment. But it really wasn't. It wasn't dangerous, you know, as much as our parents might have thought that, you know, who are these guys with long hair and tight pants from England? What the hell is going? This is not music. Frank Sinatra is music.
Exactly.
Tony Bennett is music. Mel Torme, you know, Perry Como. So this was they were like aliens, as a youth, I gravitated towards that.
And then, of course, it got more dangerous with Eric Burdon and the Animals, and then the Stones and those guys.
That was part of the whole British invasion thing. That I am so lucky that I grew up around that time, because there was just so much new music and groundbreaking records that came out in those mid to late 60s.
Now, you were fortunate, as was I, because you grew up not only in that, but then you got to experience another complete turnaround in music where it was all the same in many ways during the original punk rock scene of the late 1970s when we were graduating. We had, of course, the Ramones, and we had Debbie Harry and Blondie, and we had Television and Sex Pistols overseas. I always wondered why you, maybe you had, and I just don't know this, why you hadn't graduated into punk rock, being a New Yorker, since that was the hub of America's punk scene.
Well, you know, in certain ways, Cherry Vanilla was teetering on punk music.
Right.
Cherry still had a pop sensibility to her, but there was a side of her that kind of spoke to the punk scene, and she was very close with Debbie Harry and Patti Smith, and there was a bunch of bands at that time in the New York City area that were doing punk music, like the Dolls, Tough Darts, Another Pretty Face. There was a ton of stuff out like that. But for me, it wasn't. And this is, I'm not trying to disparage anybody or any genre. It just wasn't musical enough. You know, I gravitated towards melodic pop stuff with interesting chord changes. Punk was more of a statement. The pop music was more about just trying to craft really, really good 2.5 to 3 minute pop songs.
Right. And we saw Debbie Harry and Blondie kind of follow that suit. They became very big pop stars.
Yeah.
So, interesting. Okay, I always wondered that because you were so entrenched in that whole scene with a lot of the same people, and yet you always seemed to be a little bit different musically.
Yeah, and there was also the other thing about, you know, I wasn't really into putting eye makeup on or pins in my eyebrows or... that just didn't appeal to me.
All right. Let's play one of the new songs. Let's play the single, More Love. This is something the world certainly needs. Tell me about the song and when did you write this? Is this a COVID-era song?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, it is, because that song was the last song that we recorded for the record. Phil Thornley, the guy who produced the record, and I... We sat back, we had 11 songs done and in the can, and Phil said, you know, I think we need one more song on the record. I think we need one more that's kind of like, not mid-tempo, but a little faster, and with a real positive message. Phil came up with the idea, we finished it together, and then the good thing about More Love is it's a very good indication what the rest of the record is like, because it rounded out the entire project. So it made sense for me to choose that as the first single.
Now, it's been out as a single about 3-4 weeks?
No, about 2 weeks,
actually. 2 weeks. Okay. Yeah. Have you gotten any feedback yet? Are you getting a lot of ads on the stations?
We just service radio, so it's just being serviced right now.
Okay, and I know the album...
We'll see. Fingers crossed.
All right. Album came out today, and we're going to play some more songs from it. We'll be back to talk to Kasim in just a minute.
We'll be right back.
Truer words never spoken. The world needs more love, and probably now more than ever. That is the lead single, lead song off Chasm Sultan's new album, Chasm 2021. 12 tracks on there, 11 originals and one cover, and interesting choice of cover. We're going to get to that in a bit, but right now I do want to talk about the songwriting for this album. You mentioned that was the last one written. What about the others? Was this something, it's been a while since you released anything, so is this stuff that's been building up? Did you sit down and write all of these with this project in mind? Because they do flow well together.
Thank you. You know, funny enough, I did not start out to write a record. I didn't sit down. I am constantly writing songs, ideas, little snippets of stuff. Ooh, this would make a good chorus. This would make a good verse. This might be a good instrumental section. So I'm always creating, but never with the idea that I'm going to put something together until I actually until I make a conscious decision to do that. So what happened was I was in England on a little vacation, and I was visiting my friend Phil Thornalley, and he asked me when I was going to do my next solo record. Phil is a very famous songwriter, producer in the UK, Europe, and here, as a matter of fact. So I said, you know, I don't know. I'm not sure. I wasn't really thinking about it. And he said, well, do you have any ideas? And I said, yeah, I do, as a matter of fact. I played him some stuff. He said, okay, great. We're going to start recording, and then we're going to do a whole record together. So he kind of gave me a little kick in the pants to get it started, which is what I need every now and then, what everyone needs.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how the whole project came to be. It started right there with Phil just saying, you know, maybe you should do another record sometime.
Now, what was the song you played for him that flipped the switch?
The second song on the record.
Unsung.
A song called Unsung, which is actually part of another project that I'm working on, which is a podcast, which is a series podcast that will be released sometime later this year. It, for lack of a better term, it is a comedy, a drama / comedy, so a dram-com or whatever you call it, and loosely based on my life.
Okay. How many parts, or is it ongoing?
Right now, there's 6 episodes. We've recorded 6 episodes, and we're just putting the finishing touches on production. And then we bring it to market and see what happens.
Was that the option because of today's world and technology, as opposed to doing like an autobiography?
Actually, it started as a television script.
Okay.
And we're working. My manager and myself are working with a director, Michael Simon, who directed all the VH1 Storytellers episodes and a bunch of other music videos. And Michael and I had worked together in Australia a few years back on a Meatloaf show, Meatloaf Live with the Melbourne Symphony Orchestra, which was an amazing CD. And then my manager actually grew up with Michael. They knew each other from college. So it made perfect sense to bring Michael in to help with this project. Mm-hmm. So between the three of us, we've created this show that initially we thought we'd bring to see if we can get green-lighted on a pilot. However, it's easier these days to start off as a podcast and to create a buzz like that, and then see if we can get some interest and some traction like that.
Okay, interesting. That song we just played, More Love, it has certain utopia-isms in it.
Yeah.
It reminds me of something that might have been on a Utopia album. Because of who you are and your roots, or is that something you strove to do?
You know, I grew up in the band. I really cut my professional teeth in Utopia, and everything that I know about, or most of what I know about record production, songwriting, arranging, and everything involved with making music, I've learned from Todd Rundgren and the other two guys in the band, Willie Wilcox and Roger Powell. Mm-hmm. So it makes perfect sense that it's kind of ingrained in me. So when I sit down to write, I'm always drawing on the well that was started when I worked with Utopia.
Now, how did you come to work with Todd? I mean, you go back to the late 70s. Again, that was pre-Meatloaf or about the same time as Meatloaf, and it was post Cherry Vanilla. So yeah. how did he fall into? He's a unique character into his own right with his sounds.
You know, it was just a happy set of accidents that led me to hear about the audition for Utopia. I had taken a friend of mine, Earl Slick, who was a famous guitar player,
yeah,
and plays with David Bowie, or played with David Bowie.
Right.
And I took him to the airport one day. He mentioned that Todd Rundgren was looking for a bass player. I said, I'm interested. He said, okay, call Michael Kamen, who I met through Cherry Vanilla. And Michael was just a wonderful, wonderful guy who kind of was a bit of a mentor to me in my early years. And he said, call Michael, tell him you're interested. That's who I heard about the audition from. I called Michael. He said, okay, I will recommend you to Roger Powell. And then the next day I got a call from Roger. And then the following day I was on an Adirondack Trailways bus from Port Authority in New York up to Woodstock to audition for the band.
Wow. And you've been with them ever since on pretty much everything.
Pretty much, yeah. Well, I've been with Todd for, I think it's going on 46 years.
Wow. I guess you guys kind of like each other, huh?
You would think so.
What's new with Todd? Is there anything that you guys are working on in that realm?
Well, he's being inducted into the Rock Hall of Fame this year, which is really great for him. Very happy for him and the fans. And we are getting ready to start a tour on October 1st. We're going out for, I guess, about maybe 7 weeks from everywhere, from Boston to San Francisco, and all stops in between. And this is, he's doing an album / individualist, one of his other albums. So it's kind of a two-sided tour where first half of the show, we're doing one side of A Wizard, A True Star every night, and the second half of the show is a collection of his most popular hits from his career.
Now, with the induction, is that him as a solo artist, or is that Utopia as a group? Because he has both, the solo and the group, but to me, they're almost inseparable.
Well, yeah, I mean, Utopia played a big role in Todd's career, but his career spans so many different aspects. There's the solo artist, there's the songwriter, there's the producer, and there's the visionary and the video artist. So I think that his induction in the Rock Hall is for his the collection of his work as an artist in the music industry. And while Utopia is a part of that, it certainly is just a part and not the majority of what people know Todd for. I mean, most people know Todd for Hello, It's Me, I Saw the Light, and Bang the Drum.
Right, you know? Right. Now, one of the things that Todd, again, is incredible at is production, going from the New York Dolls to an odd pairing with Sean Cassidy back in the Wasp days, with which you played on that album.
Yeah.
Have you picked up any of the production side of his work? Are you looking to do more production? Have you done much production?
I did. I produced Meatloaf's Storytellers, VH1 Storytellers album. Up until Chasm 2021, I've always produced my own material. Work with other artists from time to time on production, co-produce stuff. I did an album in the 80s with my friend Tommy Price.
Right.
Did an album called Price Sultan. I co-produced that. I am always working on production and producing music. So
the
it's just part of everything that I do.
The Price Sultan album was a great record. It fell between the cracks. Any chance that's going to be reissued at any point now that we're in the world of indie rock?
Funny enough that you mentioned that. I've just been talking to a friend in Australia who wants to relicense it from Sony. So myself and Tommy are in the process of releasing a license agreement for this this gentleman who runs a record label in Australia. Now, will it translate to here? I don't know. It might, but I'm sure you could still find a copy of it here and there.
Okay. The next question is, with vinyl returning, are you going to be reissuing any of the older stuff, or will Casim 2021 be on vinyl?
We're talking about it. It's a very, very kind of a rough area for me, because vinyl is expensive to produce, mm-hmm. and unless there's a big demand for it, it doesn't make a lot of financial sense for a record label to throw a bunch of money at vinyl. But I'm begging them to make some vinyl, so we'll see what happens.
Okay, and you're with Deco Entertainment. This is your
great record label.
First record with them, right?
First record with them. They're a great bunch of people. Really, really care about the artists and the music that they work with. So I am very proud to be a part of the Deco Entertainment family.
Was that the attraction for that label? I mean, they're a growing label right now. I only recently heard about them maybe a year and a half, 2 years ago. And
I had spoken to a few other labels, and granted, you know, I just thought that Deco really took a big interest in me as an artist, as opposed to just a record that they'll put out digitally and see what happens, along with a stable of other artists that they have. Deco really took an interest in what I had to say, worked with me on the cover, on the videos, on the promotion. So I'm very, very happy there, and I can't say enough good things about them. If someone's looking for a record label, you should definitely check out Deco Entertainment.
All right. Now, I don't think you have your own website anymore, but you do have Facebook. I've been following you on Facebook.
I do have a website.
You do?
Still. It's CasimSultan.com.
Okay. And what's the best place for people to follow the career? Is it at the website or the Facebook?
Facebook would be the best place to get the skinny on what I'm doing right now. For history, just go to my wiki page.
Okay.
Just go to Wikipedia. You'll find out everything you might want to know about me.
One of the things on the Facebook, I just pulled you up here, is you're sitting at like the kitchen table signing copies of the CD. So tell me about this special package that you guys are doing.
Well, these days, it's not just about the music. It's also about the T-shirts and the tote bags. And we did a really, really cool thing. We did a little bracelet mm-hmm. that has a lyric from the first single on it, More Love. The world needs more love. And so you can get a little bracelet with a package. Just a really cool way to support music and live and record sales and stuff like that. And it's a really, really nice little bundle.
Now, they can link to that and get that through both the website and the Facebook?
Yeah, if you go to CasimSultan.com, it will take you right to a page that you can purchase the CD and the merchandise from.
All right. Let's play another song. Let's play the one you were talking about, Unsung.
Oh, that's great. Yeah.
Yeah, this is one maybe other radio stations wouldn't play, but hey, I'm going to play it.
Thank you, Tom.
All right. This is Unsung. We'll be back with Cass after this.
And play in time. Whoa, I fly in, I fly out, I fly home, and everywhere in between. Welcome to my nightmare. Everyone thinks I'm living the dream. My life is unsung. The words won't come. Stay
God for Rundgren.
People see what they want to see. They see the fantasy, I will admit. Take a look behind the curtain and you'll see that it's all just bullshit.
Bullshit.
My life is unsung. The words won't come. Staring at the page trying to find the right ones. Unsung. There's no refunds. Trying to write the tune, yeah. To a life unsung.
Unsung.
Oh yeah.
Everybody loves you. Everybody hugs you. Everybody thinks you're great. But the truth is more uncertain. Here behind the curtain, life is never on a plate.
I'm always running late.
Everybody thinks life and entertainment is just wonderful, and sometimes it is, and sometimes you're staring at that paper. As a music journalist, I do that often and wait for the ideas to come. And as a songwriter, it's got to be tough. I mean, you, like you said, you jot down notes, you have some melodies in your head. How do you put the puzzles together, you as a songwriter? Is there a rhyme or reason, a method, a chemistry?
That's a really good observation, the puzzle, because that's how I look at it all the time. It's really a puzzle, and the trick is not painting yourself into a corner. And sometimes that's very, very difficult. So the way that I work is a lot of times I will start with an idea musically, and then I'll get a melody idea, and then I'll write the words last. And what happens some more often than not, really, is that I get married to an idea or a certain vowel sound, and then I'm stuck trying to come up with the exact word that fits in to the music and the melody, when it really, most of the time, should be the opposite way around. It should be that you're a storyteller, mm-hmm. and you're telling a story, and the music and the melody has to fit around the story that you're telling.
I love the fact that you used the word conundrum in there. I thought, oh, what
conundrum.
A great word.
Yeah, well, we were very proud of ourselves that it's like we actually found a rhyme for conundrum.
Yeah, that was good. I like that.
Yeah.
But the melody there, it reminded me of a 70s, I don't know, Cowsills, Partridge Family kind of fun song. And then, but the lyrical content is pretty serious. It's like, look, it's not all roses. You know, we work hard, and it's tough. I just like
the paradox there. I'm going to let you in on a little secret, Tom. I sat down. I'm a big Sarah Bareilles fan.
Okay.
And I love her first big hit. I'm not going to write you a love song. And I love the way the piano works in that song, the chord changes, the lyric, and the melody. And I sat down to try to my hand at writing a song like that. That's where I came up with the idea for Unsung, was from Sarah Bareilles. Mm. And then from there, when I brought the idea to Phil, we thought about, well, what was the best thing to talk about? And he's like, well, why don't you just talk about your life? You know, why don't you talk about your career? And so it made perfect sense to talk about not just the good things, but to be kind of tongue in cheek and a little sarcastic and honest, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, it might look glamorous from the outside, but you know, sometimes it's hard work.
Right. Right, definitely. Anyone that's been in this business knows that. It's a roller coaster in many ways. One of the things that you had mentioned how you always produced everything, you know, that you were working on and some of the other projects on the side, like the one with Tommy. You put a lot of stock and a lot of faith in Phil on this album. What was it like releasing Control as a producer? I'm sure you had input, but you kind of trusted his gut and his vision.
It was difficult. To be honest with you, it was really difficult because left to my own devices, I would probably still be working on the record. I would still be tweaking things here and there, changing this, changing that, never really finished. There's a famous quote, I'm not sure who said it. Some people attribute it to Sting, some people to somebody else, but it said, you never really finish a record, you abandon it.
Hmm.
So at a certain point, you have to say, I'm done. And it was the great part about working with Phil was that he pushed me to be done with stuff. It's okay. It's fine. Move on. You know, you'll correct it on your next record. Do it again. You know, you'll do the next record. You can worry about whether the note should go up or down.
Right.
So I really appreciated that part of working with a producer, and especially working with Phil, because I can be vulnerable and at the same token know that he has my best interest involved.
Do you think there will be more work together with you guys? Because this was a brilliant album.
Yes, absolutely. As a matter of fact, I'm talking to Phil about what we're going to do next right now.
Okay, speaking of next, now that the album is out today, how are you going to promote it? You're going out with Todd soon. Are you going to be able to do any live dates on your own? And if so, what's your band consist of?
My band is, it changes every so often, but it's usually just a three-piece of guys that I'm really close with. Most recently, I've been using Matt Beck on guitar. He plays with Matchbox 20. He's also Rob Thomas's musical director. My keyboard player right now is a guy by the name of John Korba, who's worked with Hall & Oates and Phoebe Snow. And then the drummer is a longtime buddy of mine. His name is Andy Ascalise. I met him when I was working with Blue Oyster Cult.
Mm-hmm.
He was a kind of tech go-to guy for everything that needed to be done on stage. And if somebody missed a gig, Andy would sit in for the drummer, the guitar player, the keyboard player, you name it.
Oh, wow. Utility man, huh?
Exactly, yeah. So it's a really nice band, a really good set of guys, and I'm very, very happy.
So are you going out on the road? And if so, will it be after Todd or before Todd or both?
I just finished a couple of shows here in the New York area. We did a show up in Darryl's House Club in Pawling, New York a couple of days ago. Before that, we played down in Pennsylvania by just outside of Philadelphia. And then I have to start Todd rehearsals next week, so I'm probably going to wait until early next year to start promoting and playing live behind this album. It's still a little sketchy out there. People are not running to be in small clubs, in crowds and stuff like that. Larger venues, yeah, people will go to, but the smaller clubs, they're still a little, just a little hesitant to have full capacity, and I have to wait until this nightmare is completely over before I put a string of shows together.
Okay. Now, one of the things I've always wanted to ask you, and I don't think I ever have in the past interviews we've done, it's been so long I can't remember, but bass and keys are your instruments. Were they always your go-to instrument when you were young, or did you want to be, George Harrison when you watched the Beatles?
No, I wanted to be Paul.
Okay.
I really did. So the reason I started playing bass guitar was, it was very simple. There was two guys, brothers, that had moved in around the block from me. They had a band, and they were both guitar players. I went to junior high with one of them, and he said, we're starting a band, and we need a third guy. Do you want to play with us? And I said, yeah, absolutely. I think I was about 14 at the time. And I said, I play guitar. And he said, well, we don't need a guitar player. We need a bass player. So I sold the guitar that my dad bought me a few years earlier, And I bought a bass guitar, and that's how I wound up playing bass.
That's kind of like Paul McCartney. He was a guitar player that turned to bass out of necessity.
There you go.
You have grown up to be Paul.
Yeah. And then not too long after that, I decided that I really wanted to learn how to play piano. So my then-girlfriend, who became my wife, bought me a piano, bought me an upright piano, and I moved it into my parents' basement and started to learn how to play piano. I taught myself.
Oh, wow. Very cool. You are have some guests on this. You've guested on many albums over the years. You have some guests on this album. Some of your sidekicks from Utopia. Prairie Prince is on there. John Sigler's on there. What was the impetus for inviting them, and were they just sitting around waiting for stuff to happen too?
Well, you know, a lot of my records, I like to bring in people that I really care about and whose talent I appreciate. John Siegler, the other thing, too, is that Phil is a huge Utopia fan. So Phil suggested John Siegler, because I took John Siegler's place in Utopia. So he suggested that John Siegler play bass on one song, and I was, I said, you know what, that makes perfect sense. Of course I'm going to call John and ask him, and John was more than happy to come in and play bass. Prairie, I've worked with for 30 years. And I was happy to have him play drums on the record. There's another guy on the record, Gil Asayas, who took Ralph Schuckett's place on the last Utopia reunion tour that we did in 2018. And Gil also plays in my solo band. Okay. So he's playing keyboards on the cover song Peace, Love, and Understanding. And actually, Mickey Curry from Bryan Adams' band plays drums on the song that you just played, Unsung, and one other song, Sweetest Fascination. And Keith Scott from Brian's band also plays guitar on a song.
Okay. Well, let's play that that Elvis cover. Again, yeah. I think you did a unique version of it. Before we play it, what was the reason you chose to cover that? Obviously, it's as timely today as it ever was.
Simply because of that. It just was really a real positive message for a time that we need more positive messages from artists and in music. It's always okay to point fingers at what's wrong, but sometimes it's really important to keep just your eye on things getting better, and music always helps that.
Okay.
It's a great song, and I was really happy to do it. When we thought about which song would be cool to cover, it just made a lot of sense to do What's So Funny About Peace, Love, and Understanding.
All right. This is new music off Kasem 2021, out today. We'll be back a final time to chat after this.
I ask myself.
pondering the timeless question asked by Elvis Costello so long ago. What's so funny about Peace, Love, and Understanding? New version there off Kasem 2021, released today, a 12-album, dozen-song collection available now through Decco Entertainment. My guest has been Kasem Sultan himself on the program today, and we're gonna chat for just another moment, and then we're going to let you pick whatever song you want to play. I've been kind of picking the songs today. But
okay.
Right. One of the things I was always curious about, and I thought you guys did a great job, but it never quite came to fruition, was the new cars. That was a good project.
Yeah, that was a really, really cool project that we did. It was about 2006. Meatloaf's manager at the time, Alan Kovac, brilliant manager, was working with Elliot Easton and Greg Hawks and had this idea. Alan was very, very famous for taking careers that were kind of languishing a little bit and revitalizing them, like Meatloaf, mm-hmm. Motley Crue, Blondie, and just breathing new life into heritage artists. And we all thought that it would be great to do a Cars band, and Todd agreed to do it, and I agreed, and Prairie agreed. Unfortunately, right at the very, very beginning, one of the guys in the band, Elliot, the guitar player, had an accident on a tour bus where he fell. He broke his collarbone, and we had to cut our first tour short, and it kind of like took the wind out of our sails in terms of any momentum that we had gotten up to that point. So it was sad, but it was certainly, there's an album out there and there's some videos out there. It was a lot of fun to do when we were doing it.
What was Rick's take on that?
Rick did not care for it.
Okay, I was wondering, because he didn't come back, obviously. I thought, well, maybe he gave you a blessing and said, move ahead.
As a matter of fact, he specifically said, you cannot call it the Cars. So that's why we called it the New Cars.
And it did not come with a warranty, obviously.
It did not. It didn't even have the new car smell either.
Wow. Is there anything we haven't touched on, Kasem, that you'd like to let people know about the new album or the tours coming up?
No, I mean, we've kind of run the gamut. I'm so very, very proud of this record, and I hope people give it a chance. Go download a copy, go purchase a copy, support your local musicians, and just keep listening to music. There's a ton of great music out there, and I am just happy to still be making music and putting it out there for people to enjoy.
Well, when you get your band on the road, let's do this again, and let's focus on more.
Yes.
All right. What song have we not played would you like to play?
Well, you know, I've been doing some interviews, and most of the interviews that I've been doing, there's one song that keeps coming up and people kind of gravitating towards. It's called Fast Car, and that is the second single from the record. So if you could play Fast Car, Tom, I would greatly appreciate it.
All right, consider it done. And again, keep up with him at Facebook and also KasemSultan.com, and link in there, because there's a great package with an autographed CD, T-shirts, tote bag, all kinds of fun stuff, including that unique little bracelet that you can call your very own. And it remind everybody you meet that we need love, more love.
Thanks, Tom. Thanks so much for having me, man.
All right.
Really appreciate it.
This is it. Closing song, Fast Car of the show. Stay with us.
Just another day, going nowhere fast, trying to catch a break.